Dissolution by Stefan Molyneux, Chapter 13. Shane awoke with cloth on his face.
Up time, kid, said his father,
a dark outline in a bright doorway. Reaching up, Shane pulled a pair of jeans from his head.
Conference time, said John decisively.
He left, leaving the door open, which always angered his son. It was a kind of ownership, a territory marking that felt humiliating. After dressing, Shane made his way downstairs, his mind thick with memories. He held on to the banister, remembering the first time Robert had encouraged him to slide down. He had fallen off. Robert had caught him, and in that moment of safety and security, Shane had buried his little head in Robert's chest and arms, feeling liquid love releasing in his innards like a happy yolk. Shane had been an anxious child. The irrevocable DNA strands of his personality rebelled against the genetics of his father's mind, finding no comprehension, no quarter, no truce. The immature tall father is annoyed by his short son's stature. When pressed, of course, he admits it is ridiculous, but that doesn't alter the bedrock of the gene wars that flame across the world, and so often within individual families. There was too much distance between Shane and his father, and too little between Shane and his mother. Early sibling closeness was abandoned by Robert, who fled Jean's needy quicksand to the alien sunrise heights of his father's granite soul, leaving his brother behind and below. Shane glanced at the landing, where he had been allowed to make a blanket tent while his father was away. He remembered falling asleep, as lonely as an abandoned space traveler, listening to Robert's hesitant steps approaching and receding, warring between sibling connection and the inevitable seduction of peer status. As long as Shane could remember, Robert had always been encircled by a caustic moat of brittle friends, eager to slam any affection for his tag-along self. It had enraged Shane at the time. Everywhere in the world, he heard that blood was thicker than water, and you do for family, and family is everything. But within his own family, he was nothing. Less than nothing. An annoyance, an irritant, an environmental biohazard of terminally low status that had to be hid and fled from at all costs. And the friends, the jeering peers, the laughing, disconnected masks washed up from the bottom of storms of bad families, they guarded Robert and offered him status and success and girls and laughter and approval on the condition that he betray his kin, his brother, his own flesh. Like a gang member who has to kill to prove himself, Robert had to murder his heart to gain favor from the soulless. When Robert had married Helen, he had been enmeshed friends with Greg, a small, funny, bitter man. They were often up all night trying to work out their weird conflicts, and Greg had once given Robert an entire case of empty beer bottles and demanded that he hurl them against a wall to discharge his anger. Greg truly lived the premise that Robert was inhabited by strange demons that had to be expelled through submission/humiliation rituals. Punching pillows, getting laid, speaking his mind in dangerous situations, all these were promoted, demanded even by Greg, who had some sort of mad monk Rasputin tyranny over Robert's mind. When the Sarah McLachlan song, Adia, came on with the lyrics, Adia, I do believe I failed you. Adia, I know I've let you down. Don't you know I tried so hard to love you in my way? It's easy. Let it go.
Greg carelessly remarked that this was exactly how Robert felt about his mother.
Robert was surprised, disoriented. It didn't feel deeply true.
But Greg always said that it was impossible to see yourself from the outside, which translated into the absolute, that no cheap insight that Greg had could ever be challenged without being labeled as defensive. If Greg labeled you as X and you disagreed, well, then clearly Greg had hit a nerve and the diagnosis was confirmed.
Shane hated Greg. Robert diagnosed this hatred as resentment that Greg had taken me away from you.
This was the problem. Every emotion, every disagreement was viewed through the most petty potential lens.
Hey man, Greg can't just be manipulative, petty, and controlling. You only have a problem with him because he's so perceptive. And you hate not him, but what he can so clearly see in you. It was all so gross and obvious.
But for Robert, it was a strangely seductive kind of quicksand. All the more strange because Greg had nothing to offer him professionally.
The reality was that Robert kept betraying himself because he could not admit that he had perpetually betrayed his brother, which Peter deeply sensed. But that grimmest of lessons was still to come in his life.
A week before his wedding, Robert had a long conversation, a monologue really, with Shane.
Shane, you are my only brother. Everyone knows that. Everyone knows how close we are. That's a given. So you are automatically my best man. You know that, right? Now, I know you have some issues with Greg, but we are pretty close, and he's really helped me with my commitment issues with Helen. Probably saved the whole relationship, to be honest. He's done this long weekend seminar about action and commitment and standing for what you believe in. He just demanded to know what was standing in my way, why I was so hesitant. And he said, and this is so obvious in hindsight, of course, he asked me if I genuinely thought I could do better. Such a, like, simple question, right?
Robert laughed.
Better than Helen?
You know, we once came out of my room and Greg was kind of snarky and he asked, hey guys, what were you doing in there? And Helen just said, hey man, sometimes you just need a good screw.
Robert laughed.
Fearless, right?
It sounds a bit cringe, but it worked in that moment. She's not intimidated by him at all. It's so great.
Anyway, Greg said that he is the number one reason we are getting married. So he should be the best man. And I said, well, what about Shane? And Greg said that you are automatically the best man in everyone's mind. So I get a wedding best man.
That makes sense?
Sure, it does. So you are my best man, Shane, in my heart. But at the wedding, Greg is my best man because he made us get married by calling me out on my procrastination, my cowardice.
Don't look hurt, bro. You would have done it, I'm sure, but you're too close. It's too personal, and you have your own troubles.
So really, man, don't take this the wrong way, but he's been so instrumental in my life that he can't just be another tux in the crowd. That's his phrase. He's foundational to my marriage, and I want him to be foundational to our wedding day, and you are already by blood.
And the justifications went on, and Shane was cornered because the conversation was just a ritual. Since Robert had already made up his mind, been programmed by Greg, and this was all just ex post facto justification. The execution order had been decided weeks ago. The presentation of evidence was only in the nature of justification, not evaluation. He could no more defy Robert than he could his mother.
And so Shane had agreed and hadn't raised a fuss because he was wise enough to know when a battle could not be won. To choose a new buddy of 3 months standing over his own brother of over a quarter century was such a wild idea that it could never be rationally defended, and thus could only be enforced by will and sophistry. And so Shane had been demoted to penguin extra at Robert's wedding.
He was allowed to give a short speech, but Greg had basked in the spotlight and waxed eloquent and given the glowing couple strange praise for their potential and possibilities, and came with no date and talked to no one except Robert and tried to leave early right after his speech until Greg had vanished from Robert's life right after the wedding, which had angered Shane to no end. To have sacrificed your own and only brother for the sake of some wannabe guru suction pad, how gross and weird was that? But Shane didn't learn the truth until quite a bit later in life, which was that it was his father, John, who performed the exorcism. John had followed Greg out into the parking lot after his speech. "Greg," he called. Startled, Greg had turned around, his bushy Eastern European eyebrows hunching together like wrestling caterpillars.
"Mr. John, is that you? I can't see.
Where are you going?"
"Well,"
said Greg in that patient, it's obvious tone he used so often.
"Home. Home, I guess. Why?
Why are you leaving so soon?"
"Why does that matter?"
Greg laughed self-deprecatingly.
"I'm not much of a party person, I guess."
"Was it you? Is my son right that you demanded to be the best man?"
"Demanded? No, no. Please, that's not fair language. I made the request."
He smiled broadly.
"Made my case."
"Why?"
"Why? Well, because Rob and I are close, of course. We know each other in deep ways. I wanted to be part of the celebration."
John advanced under the white light of the parking lot lampposts.
"Why best man, though?"
"I think I am the best man for Robert. I am working for his best interests."
John's eyes narrowed.
"Something about you is not right."
Greg took a deep breath.
"Quite a broad category. Categories, perhaps. Do you want me to be frank?"
"Honest men don't ask that."
"Fair?"
"Fair."
Greg wagged a forefinger.
"Smart. Well, you want to know why I wanted to be Robert's best man? I have asked already." "Sure, sure, just checking."
"Well?"
Greg lowered his head slightly.
"It's a delicate matter, Mr. John."
The older man said nothing.
"Your family, well, your family has its issues.
Shane is not doing so well. Robert had some maturing to do. Helen is a delight, of course, but even she would get tired of waiting after a time. Do you see what I mean? How old are you?"
"What? Why?"
"Here's the deal," said John, taking a step forward. "I won't stall by asking you why you're asking questions. You do the same."
"All right,"
said Greg, ducking his balding head slightly.
"Forgive me, I'm not used to a drink or two.
What was the question?"
"How old are you?"
31. "Why?" "Sorry, forget that. Yes,
31. Do you have a girlfriend?"
"Is she here?"
"Don't answer a question with a question, especially a bitchy one."
Greg's eyes widened.
"No." "No girlfriend?"
"Boyfriend."
The younger man laughed.
"No."
"What do you do for a living?"
"Well, there is what pays the bills and what the heart wants, you see."
There was a pause. Greg said,
"Was that a question? I've lost track, sorry. I am a courier and I work in an office from time to time."
"A temp?"
"Yes."
"So you have no girlfriend, you have no career, and you make about 20K a year. Do I have that about right?"
"Sure. Sure, yes."
Greg drew himself up to his full height, which was still shorter than John.
"And are you going to say that I have no right to give advice on these, on the basis of this?"
"Your speech was offensive, Gregory. You praised only what they could become, not who they were."
"Ah, but we all have potential, do we not?"
"You mean the potential to become a bike courier and a temp in his 30s?
"Not all success is material."
John pursed his lips thoughtfully. It's stupid to state the obvious as some sort of profound wisdom. He took another step forward. Greg's left hand went into his front pocket. So yes, let us say that not all success is material. Granted. Are you successful in courage, Greg?
I think I'm courageous, yes.
Good, murmured John. Good. So now, brave man, tell me how I have failed. Here, now, to my face.
I feel alarmed.
Right. That's what courage is for. Do you believe in the right of reply?
Yes, I do. In courts,
you have passed judgment on me. Fair enough. Tell me.
To my face!
John's voice erupted almost against his will, it seemed. Even in the white overhead lights, Greg's face went pale.
You are not in a stable mood, my friend.
The obvious rejoinder, I'm not your friend, passed through John's face and made no sound. You have criticized my children, the children I raised, but you have not given me the right of reply.
How? Not so, cried Greg. Robert can bring my criticisms, my feedback to you, and you can reply.
Hearsay, said John, taking another step forward. To my face. Greg swallowed, then squared his shoulders.
If you like, why do you think you are not close to Shane?
John nodded slowly. I will indulge this. He has always gravitated towards his mother. It happens. My brother was the same. He's dead now, so he has no right of reply.
Did Shane gravitate towards his mother? Please, can you take a step back? Thank you. It seems to me that Shane was more or less left behind with his mother.
They like to talk. I don't know everything that they talk about, of course. Greg narrowed his eyes.
Did Shane enjoy these conversations?
John snorted. He wasn't locked up there. I could hear laughter.
His two...
Watch it, Greg, said John in a low voice.
Is that a threat?
It is a consequence.
For what?
For trying to take my family apart.
If I step on a footbridge and the bridge breaks, is that my fault?
Why did you not become a therapist if you care about fixing families so much?
I am really not comfortable in this conversation.
It's because then you would have some professional ethics, responsibilities. You would be policed.
Am I being policed now?
You are being confronted. You value courage and honesty. You value that too?
Yes.
Yes. Am I supposed to be dishonest with you? Lie to you?
Because you think I threaten you?
You are a little worm to me, a slimy-tongued saboteur. Greg swallowed and took a step back. You take petty power in controlling younger people with these weird words and theories of yours. They look up to you because they don't know better. And I don't know how to catch you, to be honest. You wriggle and dodge, and you're good at it. I credit you. But there's something bad in this. You. You're a failure criticizing the more successful. And I figured it would pass, like food poisoning. Then I heard about the best man switch right before the ceremony. And you're just passing through. Either Robert will stop listening to you, so you'll go and prey on someone else, or he'll keep listening and things will get so bad that you'll have to bail or get beaten within an inch of your life.
What are you talking about?
Whispered Greg. Consequences, murmured John. Stay away from my family.
Why?
Greg's voice was dry.
Why does he have to come to me for advice then, Mr. John? Why has he for years not married Helen?
Why do you care? Thundered John. You're just a buddy.
I do care. I know it has not been a long time, but I do care about Robert.
Are you gay? Is this the only way that one man could care about another? It's just weird. I've seen this before with my brother in the army, a friend who attached to him like a leech. And if you are so good at seeing this, then why was Shane with Regina?
Oh, I had words for that little minx too. Don't worry about that.
So you just backfill? You raise children who make bad decisions and then you just threaten those who care?
Regina didn't care. What the hell are you talking about?
Greg waved his hand. But I do.
But from your perspective, I am bad, Regina is bad, and you have to corner us in dark places and set us straight by towering over us. I have my keys in my hand. Step back.
Are you still tough,
friend? I am done with this conversation.
No problem, said John, rigid in a pleasant mask.
We can pick this up next time we see each other.
We... what?
Well, they've got a new place together. I'll be hanging out a lot. It's a bit of a fixer-upper. They need help.
John laughed.
Not that you'd be any good with tools.
But I am. I'm a whiz with power tools. Not quite an expert, but pretty close. And this conversation is in private. I'm biblical that way. You got a problem with someone, you talk to them one-on-one, face-to-face, not behind their back like a gossiping little girl. After that, if you don't get resolution, you confront them in public. So I'll be there, most likely. And if I'm not, I soon will be. I've asked Helen to let me know when you're coming over. And we'll keep having it out, my friend, until I am satisfied. Keeping his hands spread out in the open, John leaned in. Because I think you'd like to whisper in the shadows, not talk directly. A saboteur, not a soldier. And I hate that, Greg. I hate it. But we'll sort it out over time, over and over, until resolution is achieved.
And what is resolution for you?
I don't know. But I'll know it when I feel it. The two men stared at each other in the dark parking lot, the sounds of disco pulsing out from the rotunda, the rainbow lights shifting over their still, set faces. Shane turned the corner of the living room and saw his father sitting spread-legged on the cream-colored couch, while his mother sat hunched over on the love seat, staring at the off-white carpet. Shane's wasted months, 18 or more, suddenly rose within him as timelessness suddenly fell away from his soul. The photocopied days were suddenly revealed as bleeding paper from a finite stack, reduced every day to less and less by nothing at all. Shane suddenly noticed his parents' aging faces, sags, folds, creases, and papery skin. The slow waterfall of bulbous flesh was falling from their skulls.
Sit down, said Shane's father,
not unkindly, but with a bedrock kind of firmness that did not bode well for the continuation of procrastination. Shane sat, playing with his own thumbs.
Get it over with, he said dully.
His mother cleared her throat.
What do you think is coming?
Shane smiled without mirth.
Exit stage everywhere.
John's voice was strangely gentle.
Well, we do have to...
Something has to change, wouldn't you say?
Something is changing.
Shane's words sounded hollow, even to him.
Shane, dear, you are still off the drugs, right?
He nodded.
That's never coming back.
Jean nodded.
I knew that, but it's a relief to hear.
What are you pulling in a week, son?
Shane swallowed.
I guess 300?
John nodded slowly. His eyes were suddenly wet.
I want to get inside you, son. Shake things off, move you around. I know you have things tough, your generation. We had it tough in our own way, but not like this lying around. I know you're not lazy. That was never an issue when you were young. I remember having to yell at you at 3 in the morning to stop drawing or reading or whatever you were doing.
When you want to do something, nothing can stop you. So I guess I don't really know what has stopped you.
Jean pursed her lips.
We're not trying to be any kind of therapist, of course, but I suppose...
Her voice trailed off, her eyes averted.
Just talk to us, Shane. We're kind of sailing the ship here, and it sort of feels like... I don't know, you're some kind of stowaway, you know?
Jean's face crumpled, and she suddenly burst into tears.
Are you broken, Shane? Did she break you? I can't stand it. These thoughts, like if I went back in time and beat her off with a 2x4, kept you safe from that witch. It's my job, our job, and we just let you get taken or eaten alive or something like that.
John leaned over and patted the back of her liver-spotted hand.
Okay, Jean, we don't have any time machines. We have to work with what is.
Jean would or could not stop crying.
Such a tender toddler, so clingy, but in a good way. I just want to take you in my arms like a piece of clay and undo everything or remake everything or I don't know.
Her sobs overcame her.
Almost against his will, Shane jumped out of his armchair and knelt before his mother. His voice was thick with emotion.
Mom, it's not... I'm not trying to... I don't want you to feel this way. We don't run the world, but the world just runs us over. Oh, and that doesn't mean what I want it to mean. I'm just lost and unprepared. I don't know what I want. Everything feels hollow and useless. Like me, I can't get any traction on the ground. Everything I want for my future is like, it's like wanting to build an intricate sandcastle, but the tide is coming in. It's all for nothing. It's just going to get washed away.
John nodded slowly. Everyone, if they're honest, has those feelings at times. I look at my work, my office, my client list, my email inbox, and sometimes it's just a bunch of things, atoms, like white pixels and black space that I'm just shuffling around.
Jean shot a confused look at her husband. Shane sank back on his heels, running his hands through his hair.
I know you guys want to help, and I appreciate it, I really do. But it's like I had a journey to the end of my life and back, and it just adds up to nothing. And there is a part of my brain that feels broken, like two hands reaching across a chasm, but not able to even touch fingertips. That doesn't mean anything. I'm not trying to be poetic, but my life feels like nothing in the face of some kind of eternity. And I've been walking. I go around to our old neighborhood in Don Mills, and there's no one there that I recognize. It's just the foreign country. Everything we were has been erased. And that's all just spreading. The world feels half underwater. So that's why I stay upstairs.
John's wild, emotional words struck deep chords in his parents.
So, and... You guys, your generation, you were supposed to keep us safe. I don't mean from people like that witch, Satan, but a larger, whatever, I don't know, whoever's hidden and in charge. You were supposed to defend our culture, our history, our way of life, or something like that. I walk around and I feel like I've been transported to the other side of the world 100 years ago. Do you know what I mean?
Flashes of guilty fear rocketed past his parents' faces.
Like, I know that Robert has joined the gang, the world, or whatever, and it's working for him, at least for now. I don't know. He's got his wife. That's great, although... But I... Something in the drugs or the... Whatever the hell that was, that relationship... It all gave me a vision of everything that was coming down the pipeline.
Shane wagged a slow finger.
And I think
You guys know about this a little, maybe deep down, which is why it's so hard for you to correct me or whatever this intervention is. And I don't know who is responsible for the decaying state of the world. Maybe it's entropy. Maybe it's Aztec demons. Maybe it is boomers. But there's something we can't talk about the failing state of the world and of the land our ancestors built, which is a real shame. I mean, a real shame. It's kind of shameful, but nothing can be said, and so nothing can be fixed. John whispered. I don't know how to answer that. It's very vague. Jean cleared her throat and said, How can we help? John shook his head. It's not about helping, Jean. We talked about this, please. Shane raised his red eyes. Then what is this about? John's lips closed briefly into a tight line. It's about change, son. Things have to change. Time moves on, no matter how stuck we are. Shane laughed bitterly. Yeah, got it, Dad. Time is linear. I appreciate that. It's April the 17th. You have 2 weeks to find a place. Shane stared down at the carpet, wondering if there were still any of his skin cells embedded in it from countless hours of roughhousing. His mother's breath caught in her throat. There was a long silence. So I'm supposed to just get a job with good pay and benefits and a nice apartment in the city? Do you have any idea what the economic conditions are out there, Dad? We've got like 250,000 people pouring into the country every year, willing to work for nothing and willing to stack bodies in a bachelor apartment like Cordwood. No racism, cried his mother automatically. Shane's shoulders sagged. It's not about race, Mother. It's just supply and demand. Cause and effect. All the things you taught me since I was a little kid, Dad. I mean, it's not like they're bringing in 1 million boomer accountants to drive down your wages, right? And as a white male... Jean's face was pale. I won't hear this kind of talk. Robert is doing just fine. Yeah, for regulated professions, the effects are slower. I get that. I just don't understand why you feel such empathy and sympathy for foreigners and immigrants, but not for your own flesh and blood. Doesn't that seem a little fucking strange to you? John said, these foreigners, as you call them, are very hardworking, very dedicated, and they pay their bills on time, which is why, one of the main reasons why we have this lovely house. Yeah, I get that. So maybe they work hard, some of them, but that just drives down wages for everyone else. No, let me speak, for God's sake. So maybe they work hard, and it's hard for me to get a job, and maybe they drive up the price of housing, so it's harder for me to start a family, or maybe they don't work so hard and end up taking up space and healthcare and tax money and God knows what. What the hell have you been reading on the internet? Demanded John. I don't hate immigrants, you know that. Everyone's an immigrant at some point, but it makes things more difficult in some ways. You have to understand that, at least. There was a long silence. John and Jean's cold faces glowered down at Shane's hunched form.
I really don't like this habit of blaming everyone else for your own problems, said John. Next thing you know, it'll be the capitalists, right? There are countless people doing very well in this life. No immigrant forced you to date Regina or push that poison into your veins. Nobody's guarding the outside of your room, making sure that you can't leave the house. If you want me to sympathize with you, and I do love you, son, I do care about you, believe it or not, then you have to give life everything you've got. No holds barred, nothing left in the chamber. And if you do that, and somehow all of these mythical immigrants bar your way, then I'll be happy to listen to you about these theories of yours. But it seems to me you are looking more for excuses than solutions, and I'm frankly sick and tired of funding that.
Shane looked up, his eyes narrowing. Okay. Okay. So I pack up my belongings in my old kit bag and smile and trudge on like a happy hobo. That's a pretty pathetic and poetic way of saying that you have to get a job when you are 30 years of age. And yes, I mean a real job, something for the future, something with
sacrifice where you're not just hanging around with a bunch of losers feeling vaguely superior. Jean said, John, please. She reached forward and stroked Shane's greasy hair.
Of course we want the best for you, my dear, and we want to help more than anything. But what we have been doing, clearly it hasn't helped.
There was a moment of silence. John clapped his hands on his knees. Shane, son, it's a done deal. I'm happy to lend you the car. I'm happy to drive you around. I'm happy to help you out with a down payment or deposit or whatever you need. You can borrow my old beater for a couple of months if you need it, but this ride is over. Do you hear me? And you can get mad at us and the government and the immigrants and the job situation and the housing crisis, but getting mad at everyone except yourself has done actually nothing to get yourself out of this hole. In fact, I think you are deeper in than when you first started. And that's on us. We are your parents. We have been paying these stupid bills and not requiring you to lift a little finger around here. And that ends today.